Some psychotherapists are challenging insurance company denials of coverage for patients. A group called the Psychotherapy Action Network has come up with an insurance toolkit that includes an insurance guide and insurance tracker. The guide talks about what therapists and patients should know when insurance providers deny or question care. The purpose of the tracker is to document obstacles to insurance coverage and reimbursement. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Linda Michaels, a psychologist based in Chicago and the co-founder of the Psychotherapy Action Network.
When did therapists first start noticing that this was a problem, that insurers weren't really covering people who needed help from therapists? Is this like just an ongoing problem that's been going on for decades, or is this something more recent?
This has been a very long-standing problem. It's very disconcerting that it has gone on for so long, because psychotherapy in the long run is incredibly cost-effective, helps reduce medical costs and medical usage, and helps save insurance companies money on that front. But for many, many years, this has been a terrible problem where insurance company policies have prevented people from getting care because they have not paid or wanted to pay for psychotherapy.
So your network, of course, is attempting to do something about this. How are you going about that?
What we are doing at Psychotherapy Action Network is we are providing tools and information for therapists on what they can do to have more control and over their therapy practices and help their patients secure payment for necessary psychotherapy. So, for example, we have a guide, a step-by-step guide on our website that therapists can follow if they or their patient receives a letter from an insurance company where the insurance company says, oh, we're not going to pay for this. We have instructions that therapists and patients actually can find useful in what they should do. We also have a tool where we are tracking problems from insurance companies. So we're really trying to get the word out. If therapists or patients are running into obstacles with insurance companies, please let us know. Why is this important? Because the more information we have about the kinds of obstacles, which really happen over and over again, these are systemic problems. The more information we have about these obstacles, the better. We previously have tracked a number of these insurance company, I call them abuses, actually. We got detailed information on a number of these problems. We published our letter. We sent it to the federal government. And beyond the federal government, what happened was that led to a whole lot of reporting in the media, in a multi-part expose from a national media organization, which brought a lot of attention to the problem, and also contributed to a new law that was just passed in the state of Illinois, which I think is fantastic and an example of how legislative reform can be so important and necessary. But this new law in Illinois makes a number of provisions to really ensure that psychotherapy is paid for by insurance companies. And not just paid for, but paid for at a fair rate for therapists, because that's a big part of the problem, is that the insurance companies underpay therapists significantly compared to any other medical profession. Therapists are paid at the lowest levels, which, of course, understandably, drives many therapists away from participating in insurance in the first place. Now, the insurance companies actually like that because they get to save money, but it really creates a big problem for people out there who need help, who need psychotherapy, and are having a really hard time affording it and have to use their insurance to pay for it.
Is this kind of like the situation where you have insurance companies, say, denying coverage because they want the coverage to be of a narrow character or scope? You know, for example, I remember having a health plan that would cover acupuncture, but only if you were in acute pain. Do insurance companies do that with therapy, mm-hmm. to say, only if you're in a crisis situation or something like that? Or do they just limit the time that you can go see a therapist?
Yes, they do. They try to do that. They're really using it in a lot of cases to do exactly what you just said and just limit what they pay for to get someone through an acute crisis. Now, there was a huge class action lawsuit that actually went through the courts in San Francisco. And this was a class action lawsuit against United Behavioral Health, which is the largest insurance company in this country. And the class won, United lost. And basically, the lawyers for the class of people were able to show that United Behavioral Health Care systematically did not cover care beyond that acute emergency crisis moment. And the lawsuit, or the judge's ruling, outlined several principles, eight principles that actually insurance coverage must follow. One of those principles is acute crisis care is not enough. Insurance companies have to pay for enough care to return someone to and keep someone at their normal functioning level. Just the Band-Aid to get someone through the emergency, that's not nearly sufficient. So this was an incredibly important class action lawsuit. Of course, United appealed, and then class won again, and United appealed again, and it's still tied up in the courts. But these principles of care of what insurance companies should be covering are very, very important. And I think they hopefully will be written. They got written into state law in California, and I hope they also get written into law in other states.
And how typical is this kind of denial behavior by insurance companies? Is it pretty much across the board, or are there companies that don't do that?
I personally am not aware of any companies that don't do this. This, again, I think is really a feature of the for-profit private insurance company system that we have in this country. We at Psychotherapy Action Network, we recently did a research study of therapists, and we were researching some new kinds of companies that are new intermediaries, new middlemen that offer to interact with the insurance company on your behalf, and they'll do your billing and things like that. So this is kind of a new trend, and we wanted to understand this. But the reason I mention it here is because we started off in the research study asking therapists just to get the lay of the land. Like, what are the most challenging issues you deal with? What are the top pain points you have as a psychotherapist in your work? And the top answer by far was dealing with insurance companies. That is the most stressful thing about being a therapist. So this is really a pervasive problem. There may be some differences here or there in particular insurance companies or plans, but across the board, dealing with insurance companies, being worried about getting paid, documentation, and lots of administrative barriers and hoops to jump through, this is far and away the most challenging, stressful thing, the biggest problem about being a psychotherapist today.
And you mentioned what was done in one case, at least in a state legislature, to deal with the problem. Is this something that is really a state-by-state issue, or can Congress intervene some way?
Yeah, well, all of the above. I mean, because some insurance policies are regulated at the state level, and they're regulated by that particular state and that particular state's insurance commissioner and the state laws. There are other kinds of insurance policies that are regulated at the federal level. So it's really a complicated network of different kinds of insurance plans that are even out there. And it's very confusing to lay people and very confusing to therapists to understand which kind of plan someone has, who's the regulating authority, what rights do they have, who do they go to when there's a problem, et cetera. That's why, some of the tools like the guide that we have on our website and some other organizations have similar templates and tools as well. That's why all of this information is so important, because it's very, very confusing landscape out there.
And then there's that other problem, or at least one other problem with therapy. We've seen it out here in California where, for example, therapists who work for Kaiser went out on strike because they were saying there's simply not enough of them to deal with the patients who need help. Is that something that's related to what you're talking about, or is it really a separate issue?
It's very closely related. That's exactly right. And we actually wrote letters of support for the Kaiser strike. And, you know, it's a terrible thing to a terrible decision to have to make to go on strike and not provide care to people who need it. But I understand, I mean, the working conditions that those clinicians at Kaiser were dealing with were very, very problematic. And I know for the folks in California with Kaiser insurance, they sometimes had to wait months and months and months just to get an initial appointment with the therapist. You know, we have a lot of resources in this country, and we really have to find some better ways to use them, because to have the insurance companies in charge is a prime example of how care really gets rationed and restricted, and not enough care is provided or paid for. And it's really a travesty.
And I guess, as with other aspects of healthcare, other countries have figured out a way to do it better, would you say?
Well, I mean, I'm not an expert in all other countries, but, you know, many other countries have national health services. You know, here it would sort of be the equivalent of a Medicare for all type situation, but for people of all ages. And there are still some of the same problems. You know, in the UK, for example, they have a nationwide health service that also suffers from some of the same problems. Folks don't get enough psychotherapy. They'll have maybe a couple of sessions. It'll also be restricted only to more of what you were talking about before, that crisis management type approach. It's really not sufficient to help people who have either chronic problems of depression or suicidality, addiction, trauma. I mean, yes, there are crisis moments for people who have these situations, but a lot of them are very complex problems that take time to figure out, time to help people, time to develop new coping skills. These are not quick fix. These are very complex and sometimes, like I said, even chronic conditions, just like diabetes might be. You know, you can't just provide a little care here, a little care there, and hope that that's enough, because it's not. But in the UK, you know, what's also developed is for people who have financial means is there's kind of a secondary type system where people will go outside of the national healthcare system, pay for care on their own, out of their own pocket, and then you have really kind of like a two-tier system. But in some cases, I think that would be better, because at least people who can afford it take themselves out of the public health system, pay for care on their own, and ideally that should leave more resources available in the public system for those who need to use the public system. But I'm not an expert on what's going on in all the other countries, but I do think having a broader public care system like a Medicare for all would help spread the risk over many more people and hopefully be one step further to helping us care for more people and give them access to care and take the profit motive out of the situation. I mean, the billions of dollars every year that the for-profit healthcare insurers in this country make, billions of dollars in profit, and they spend billions on lobbying and marketing and administration, not on providing care. So if we could take some of those marketing and admin dollars and turn them into providing care and helping people, I think that would be fantastic.
So if people lose their care through their insurance plan, mm-hmm. I guess they might get help if they go to their yoga class or their Tai Chi class or talking mm-hmm. to friends or looking at a YouTube video. But they're basically on their own in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah, and there, you know, certainly many things in life that can help us feel better as your physical exercise, connection with other people, you know, nutrition and, you know, things like that. Those are all important too, but there's a difference between doing those things and then psychotherapy with a licensed professional when you are dealing with something that requires the expertise and experience of someone, a licensed clinical mental health professional. There's also some cautions about some of the consumer, quote, products or services that are out there now, the new apps and things like that. Again, these may be helpful tools to people in some situations. You know, it might be helpful for people to read a self-help book or to use a self-guided app or something like that. Certainly can be helpful, but there's a big difference between self-help and exercise and lifestyle things. And that's a far cry from, again, professional psychotherapy.
Anything else you want to add to what you've said?
Well, I appreciate your bringing this up because even though it is a longstanding problem, I think we really have to educate ourselves as clinicians and also just as people in this country who may need therapy or psychotherapy ourselves one day. We have to really understand the system in which we're all operating. And I would also encourage folks, if you do have a problem, reach out to your elected officials, let them know that they need to intervene, and that can actually do a world of good. You can actually have an impact by calling your elected official and saying, I'm having a big problem with my insurance plan. Please help me.
That's Linda Michaels of the Psychotherapy Action Network speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on December 15th, 2025.